Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we stop negotiating with our limits and we start finding out what we're actually made of. Because the truth is, most people tap out way before they're truly done. Not because their body failed them, but because their mind did. And God didn't create you to quit the moment that shit gets hard, okay? He built you with endurance, with grit, with the ability to rise, even after everything else gets stripped away. So if you've ever been knocked down, slowed down, or told you can't, this conversation is for you today. I have Perry Agass in the hot seat today. Perry, thank you so much. He's an elite coach, world record holder, and a man who rebuilt himself from the ground up. Perry, I'm glad you're here today. I launch everybody from the same kind of starting question, no exception here. So why don't you give me your elevator pitch and tell us who you are, what you do, and what makes you special?
My name is Perry Agass. I've been an elite triathlon coach now for over 15 years. I've been a coaching arguably some of the best coach best athletes in and around the world for in that time. Didn't always start that clearly. From the age of sort of like six, I was into very much football. Then I went into boxing and athletics, and through athletics, I just found triathlon. And the whole world of elite sport kind of took a different dimension for me. And it kind of really went on from there. And I got a lucky break. And again, it's an argument with many coaches out there in the world, but I got a lucky break to be an understudy to a guy called Brett Sutton, who is again arguably probably
And what
so
was, yeah.
I worked with Brett Sutton. I got the opportunity, and it literally changed my life. I was on the verge of basically walking away from triathlon, and then I'd wrote to Brett for about 5 years, and he just literally ignored me to a degree.
Yeah.
And then he gave me the opportunity to go out to Switzerland, and the rest is really history, to be honest. And
Right.
that's how I got to that point.
I want to clarify a few things just to make sure I'm hearing you correct. You said you got a lucky break, but also like you're kicking ass out there as an athlete and you're doing the work, and you messaged this guy for how long?
5 years.
So 5 years of messaging him and he ignores you and you get an opportunity, but like you called that a lucky break. So I want people to see that you actually put in work for this. Because had you not been an athlete, had you not messaged him, never would have been on his radar. So, like, you earned that. Perfect.
I mean, it was a case of I'd tried and tested many other different avenues. I'd already been in
Yeah.
elite sport. It wasn't really kind of, I'm a very intuitive person. The coaching style I actually had at that particular time wasn't really getting the results that I really wanted. It wasn't really matching my character and personality.
Yeah.
And I just knew that something was missing. And I knew about this guy that had some weird and wacky kind of coaching techniques. And there's a lot of synergies between me and him with
Yeah.
boxing backgrounds and stuff like that. And I knew he was intuitive. I knew the coaching style he had. I knew it was an intuitive style, and I knew because I wasn't particularly great at school. Academically, I wasn't nothing to shout about. And I got told when I was at school that I was going to be wasn't really. I've got a sister that's 4 years older than me, and the teachers that used to teach her when I turned up to school basically said I was going to be nothing. And that was always a motivation, a source of motivation. So when I kind of found Brett, it was almost very much like, hang on a second, this guy's up here.
Yeah.
And if I can basically, it was almost like a leveler for me. And that's when I started writing to him. And I wrote to him about three times a year.
Yeah.
And I just kept being persistent. And then I reached out to other people that kind of knew him, but they didn't really want to kind of like engage too much. And
Yeah.
I got advised to send him a letter again, and I did, and he invited me out to Samrits. And yeah, I think I called it a lucky break because it came at a point in my life where I was gonna change directions if I didn't get that opportunity.
Yeah. It's that moment. Like, you dig for the gold and most people quit before they get it. You were still in it. You hadn't turned. So I think that's amazing. I want to get to part because I read in your bio that there was a point in your life where you were told you weren't going to walk properly again. So can you tell us about that situation, what happened and what that moment is like for you?
So when I was an athlete, so back in 2011, I was a reasonably competitive athlete, and I was out on a training ride. I was preparing basically. So that particular time, I'd been coaching for a number of years, but I was still actually pretty decent as an athlete. Nothing massively to shout about. But in comparison, because obviously sport kind of moves on year after year, but I always felt like if I just wanted to give it one last shot. And I was out on a training ride. I was preparing for a race to go out into Germany. And I was going down this road that I used to go down daily on my road bike. I was doing about 22, 23 miles per hour. I was coming along the road. Cars were overtaking me, and there was a car park that came up on the left-hand side. A guy just overtook me last minute, decided that he was going to come across me. And it's a really weird thing that I had. I'm a very calm person. I can
Yeah.
deal with stuff under pressure. And this was a major test for me because I literally. Everything was going at 100 mile an hour, but I literally slowed everything down in my head because I knew that I was it. It wasn't going to be pretty. I knew I was.
Right.
I knew I was done. But it was
Right.
just like damage limitation. So I decided to go around with the car, but the car tracked me on the curb. My bike flipped up in the air, and then I came down and smacked my head on the wind mirror and the curb. And then I don't really remember. I mean, I'm telling you that I don't actually remember that.
Yeah.
That comes from statements,
Yeah.
but all I remember is going round with the car. I
Yeah.
don't remember anything else. And then when I got up, it was basically like shock. I didn't really believe that anything really happened. I had no major, I had a few cuts and bruises,
Yeah.
scrapes. My bike was a bit mangled, but it was still rideable, actually, believe it or not. Well, I say rideable, not
Right.
massively, but
Yeah.
there was a policeman there and an off-duty paramedic there, and they advised me to basically sit down, and I weren't having none of it. I was obviously in a state of shock. All I wanted to do was just go home. I eventually got taken home, and then it all started going wrong the next day. I didn't really feel that well.
Yeah.
Started to get a bit of an headache, and then I started to get this hot flush. And within about 10 minutes of feeling that, it's just, again, it's a weird feeling. It was almost like someone was filling up water inside my body,
Okay.
and it literally just rose all the way up to my like neck, and that was it. I was out, passed out, and we're talking, I was out for like seconds. Went to hospital. They stuck me on like all the machines and
Yeah.
bits and bobs and stuff like that. Then they diagnosed me that I had a minor brain injury. And then I got explained to me that my brain was just basically shutting my body down. And I just had major fatigue, short-term, long-term memory loss, slightly slurred speech. I mean, eventually that kind of passed, really.
Yeah.
But that was the initial, that was like days after the accident. And I couldn't even walk a meter without sitting down.
Wow. I think that's incredible. You go from like top of the notch at athlete, like you're here, you're crushing it, to like your body's failing. It's
Yeah.
not doing what you've known it can do forever. You hit this, you ideally hit a brick wall here. So what's going through your mind when, you can't even do the smallest things the way you used to,
Yeah, I mean, I literally thought my world was like caved in, if I'm honest. Like when I, it's hard to actually really explain in so many words, but I felt sorry for myself for a start. I kept going back to the point of almost I wasn't really sad. I was frustrated. I was angry. And I wanted to go back to that moment and relive that moment to undo it, if that makes any sense. And I had to go and see like different consultants and stuff, and they basically said to me I'd never be able to do triathlon again. I'd have like ongoing health problems. And for about 2 weeks, I literally thought my life was over. And then it all kind of changed that for I went to see another specialist, and I was in a waiting room, and this is where it all changed for me. I was in a waiting room, and there was a young boy with his mum. He must have only been about 19. He was actually a Royal Marine. He was a Royal Marine. But he was in a wheelchair. He had no legs. He basically passed out of training, been out of training for, I don't know, about 6 months. He went out to Iraq, got blown up, lost his legs. And he was there because he wanted to try and become a Paralympian. And when the mum was telling me this story, I was literally ashamed of myself, because I literally thought to myself, what the hell am I feeling sorry for myself? I've walked into this meeting room, and you're about to come in here in a wheelchair. And I immediately got angry, but it was the sort of anger that started to be the massive driver in me starting to make my full recovery. And when I investigated it and spoke to different specialists, I got told that the worst thing that would happen was I'd end up like in bed for a day if I tried to kind of. I mean, they categorically told me that I'd never be able to do it. No one's ever done it before, and I was like, well, there are people out there that's done it, but they're kind of narrow-minded when they tell you these things. And I was like, right, I'm just going to go for it and, see what happens. And I literally started off with like 10 minutes worth of walking, and then it progressed into 20 minutes, and then I swam. I mean, the first time I ever got into this pool after that, I literally done 25 meters, and I was like, literally, I needed to go to sleep after that. And then fast forward 12 months after the actual accident, I'd done an Ironman. So I made a full recovery.
It's a year later, you're competing. I think that's incredible. Something shifts mentally. I feel like, you have to think different about your body now than you did. I think, that new perspective. What are some of the things that changed with how you viewed yourself and the respect you had for what your body could do?
I think this was the massive driver, I think, for me. I had to learn about my brain again. And one of the things that I learned is how, and this happens in all walks of life, whether it's sport or business or anything, your brain has such a control because of the nervous system, and your brain tells you to make decisions. But you can actually tell your brain to F off. I want to do this if I really want to do it. And actually, it's almost like an internal battle. And I had to really learn this because my brain was always telling me to give up and stop. This is not good for you. And actually, what I learned was, if you have a slight little word with yourself that it's actually going to be okay, just fucking get on with it. It actually you can actually surprise yourself. And the more I'd done this, the more I thought, actually, hold on a second, this is amazing. Like, I wonder how deep I can really go into this. And people used to say to me, I was off my head, I was like absolutely insane. You know, people used to say, well, tell me to stop. And but the thing is, the euphoria and the overriding feeling of the power I've gained from going through that, nothing will ever stop me now, because now I've learned that when your brain says no, you have the power to say yes.
I love that. Like, that's, I think so many people are walking around and not realizing that your brain is not the boss. You're the boss of the brain. 100%. And what you said is exactly right. I literally recorded an episode yesterday that is just, it's called Get the Fuck Over Yourself. Like, just get over it and do the next right thing. And I get it. Like, you guys understand our brain wants to keep us safe. That's its job. It's been its job since, for since history. Like, we needed that little fear response, but now, I mean, it's so overwhelmed with things that we have access to that we shouldn't. Like, we shouldn't have this 24/7 and be connected to everything happening in the world. We're not meant to know all that. So your brain kind of overloads, and now nothing's safe. And so everything you do that feels a little uncomfortable, your brain's like, you're about to meet a bear. And you're like, no, it's just a text message. Like, I'm just going to answer the text message. It's just stupid things like that. But now, I mean, you work with elite athletes. What do you think separates the best from everyone else? What is that missing link?
I think they're willing to go to places that no one else is. And I think that's, there's many people out there that defy the odds, whether you're an elite athlete or not. I think I'm a massive believer that everybody can be one of life's winners. You know, I think everyone's capable of being a champion in their own right. And there's a lot of synergies with people that achieve things in business and just other walks of life. But I do think it's the people that achieve, whether it's business or sport or anything else in their life that's massively accomplished, I think it's the sheer fact that they have an unwavering desire to keep going, never stop. You know, nothing's ever realistically good enough. It's almost like an eternal challenge that they want to go one step further than anybody else. And make a difference. And I think when you have that within you, I think that makes a massive difference, because it's, not everybody's got the capabilities of going to places that no one else can. And I think but that comes from a lot of stuff from your childhood, I think, as well. I think that people have a driver from a very young age, and they're able to kind of push through. And what I've seen in my career, being around elite sportsmen, you can tell the ones that will be that you can easily tell the ones that can go further, and the ones that, there's levels to everything, right? You know, otherwise we'd all be completely amazing. But you can see the ones that can go further. You can.
What do you think the difference is between motivation and discipline in that space?
So this is I get asked this a lot, because I think motivation is a complete myth. I think
Yes,
that
agree.
motivation is just a waste, really. Motivation is obviously, like, if motivation is the initial drive. But then it becomes desire, because people watch sport on TV, or they'll see something that inspires them, and they're like, oh, I want to do that, I want to do that. And that's the initial, I want to do that. That's the motivation. But then when they're in it, if they haven't got the desire, they'll get found out very quickly.
Yeah.
So you got to have the desire. So desire is really important for me. If you haven't got the desire, you're not gonna survive the dark days,
Right.
the cold mornings, the dark times where it's only you haven't got an audience, you've got
Yep.
no one around you to pat you on the back and say good job. It's just you and only you, and you just got to get on with it, and you're the one that makes the difference.
Yeah.
And then it what happens then, it becomes consistency of building habits. And that's where you get the structure and the discipline that you just touched on there. So it's about desire, the discipline, but the discipline's the structure, and it's the consistency of building habits. And you almost, people kind of say it's motivation. It's not. It's the fact that your brain and your body have now become accustomed with the knowledge and understanding that this is what I need to do in order to get where I want to go. And it becomes like second nature.
I see that. How do you coach someone who just doesn't believe that they can do it?
That's a really good question. I think one of my strengths as a coach is I've got good vision. I can see things that other people can't. And I can see what they can't see. And the way I do that is talent doesn't really inspire me. But what's between the right and left ear really does. So if I look at an individual now and they've just come to me and they don't necessarily believe in themselves, but they've got this internal desire that they want to achieve something. And I could just see by their whole body language that they really want it. And that is realistically when I'm like, listen, I can this if you give me this, I will make that happen for you. And it's about, I've got actually, interesting enough, I've got an athlete right now. It's funny you say this because I've got an athlete right now. She struggled with exactly that, and she massively lacked belief. And I see a person, an individual that really was desperate to make a change in her life and be somebody, but she didn't know how she was going to get there because she couldn't trust anybody. It failed before, and I see that she had a hell of a lot of discipline within our own mental structure, and that's all I wanted. And then I would then go along by giving her the confidence that she can basically do this, like one day at a time, one week at a time, one month at a time, take her into one competition. She all of a sudden starts surprising herself, and then the next one, and then the next one. And it's just a slow process over the years to the point where she's pretty much on a really good breakthrough now, and she's just starting to believe in herself. It's a fascinating journey, really is.
No, I can totally see that. Right now, because we are coming up to our time limit, what is our listeners, right? Maybe they're not gonna go be, Ironman athletes, but if you could speak to them on something they can do today to just start building that discipline muscle with their lives, with something right now, what's something they could do today?
Well, in terms of activity or mental,
Both.
I mean, I always tell people that people like to look big, so let's just say like you want to be a champion of some description, but that's the end goal. You've got to work backwards and then make whatever it is you want to achieve almost an achievable target first. So it's like you've got to win your own little battles before you win the biggest battle, and be willing to kind of, if you want to win the war, you've got to lose battles along the way, and you don't get successful without failing as well. And that's what really, never, never, ever allow anybody to put that in your head. Never.
I agree with that. How can the audience, the listeners, get resourced with you? Where can they find you?
I can go on my website, it's www.perryagus.com, or look me up on Instagram, Perry underscore Agus.
Okay. You guys check the show notes for that. And Perry, this is the part of the show where I get to say what I think makes you special. It's not just that you've achieved at a high level, it's that you rebuilt yourself when most people would have accepted less. They would have stayed in the victim mentality. You didn't stay in what you were told. You didn't settle into what was realistic. You chose to fight your way back. You stayed in the arena that threatened your livelihood, that threatened everything you were at your core, even your identity. And now you're helping other people realize that they're capable of more than they've been living. I think that's incredible. You are the picture of discipline. You are the picture of leadership. And I think that's what makes you special. And to everyone listening, you guys are capable of more than you're currently choosing. God did not create you to live inside your comfort zone. He created you to grow, to push, to create, to rise. Okay, to be disciplined, to be relentless. And please remember, your mess is your message. Okay, even the setbacks, even the injuries, even the moments you thought you were done, that's where your strength is built. And if you've been feeling that pull to use your voice, to share your story, to say something that actually matters, you don't have to wait until you've made it. You don't need to be the world record holder. You can move now. And that's why I created a podcast support group for you guys, okay? It's the Audacity Lab, a place where you can start where you are, okay? The group is free, and I know that burns my coach so much. So don't make me look dumb and get in there and get resourced and use your voice. Build something without overthinking it, okay? So if that's been on your heart, please come in there with me. If this episode speaks to you, please share it, okay? You know people that Perry can't reach, and he's got a specific person he needs to talk to today, and you're going to help us get there with that, okay? And then leave a review for the show. Stars are cute, but if you just type out some words, like, that helps a lot. And if you're ready for the hot seat, come tell me why you're special. Perry, thank you so much for your time today. This was an
Thank
amazing
you.
conversation. Your work is incredible.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.